Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
And hello, how are you? Welcome aboard. This is Andrew Horowitz. It's kind of like a boat when I say welcome aboard, isn't it? Kind of welcome aboard. Oh, tally-ho. Anyway, it's Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 132. We're coming on the end of October, the time when I thought there'd be some volatility, and by golly, there is volatility. I mean, from a day when, a couple of days ago, we saw pretty much the markets fall off a cliff at 3 o'clock. Dick Beauvais, if you remember, we've talked about him way, way long ago. Now with Rockdale Securities, after he was with a group down, Thalman, whatever it was. He was a banking, he's always been a banking and financial analyst. Came out with a sell recommendation on Wells Fargo. And well, that was kind of interesting because in the morning when they came out with their numbers, they beat handily. And then they were up about 2, 3% throughout the day. And then, as a matter of fact, he in the morning was on CNBC and talked about a few things. And by the end of the day, it was down 6%. Pretty ugly. What's interesting to note about that is I have a very clear recollection about the same exact thing that happened last quarter. What happened was that Dick Beauvais came out and he pretty much blasted the regionals. Regional banks, he just said, you know, real problems here. Don't get near them. That was right after the Meredith Whitney upgrade, I believe. Right before the Meredith Whitney upgrade of Goldman Sachs on that Monday, if you remember the turnaround Monday that just sparked the July rally. And it really, you know, it was a horrible sell-off. And the next day, everything turned back. Same thing happened. Wells Fargo was up again on Thursday, and then it fell down a bit, of course, on Friday. But here's the point. Whether it's a day here, a day there, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's kind of interesting the patterns that we're seeing now. We've talked about these patterns before with, for example, Corey from over at Afraid to Trade. And he's got some good, you know, insight into that. But I think these patterns are very interesting. What we're going to talk about today is a couple of things. First, I have some things I want to talk about, some things that we're doing here for our clients, and talk about some of the economics from the week. I also want to talk about the a very, very interesting article about GE. That's right, GE, who we don't really talk about GE very often. I don't think we talked about them ever, actually. But GE, we know, has some big problems there with their GE finance unit, and how the author, who is Porter Stansberry from Stansberry, you know, where Frank Herzio works now, by the way, and he writes about how basically, well, GE's not worth anything. I'll talk about some of his points there. Very interesting. We'll talk about Walmart. We'll talk about that. Some of the gaps that are going on this week. Did you see the gap up of like Amazon and Apple and Baidu? I mean, wow, unbelievable. We had gap ups and we had severe gap downs as well this week all over the place. Interesting that we're seeing such an amount. I won't call it volatility, but we'll call it blowouts. Blowouts all over the place. We're going to talk about a short position that I like. I'm going to give that to you in a minute and why that is. And I'm going to talk about some of the things that happened towards the end of the week that I thought were interesting that you need to be aware of. We'll go from there. But let's first do ourselves a favor, just for a second. You know, I talked about a lot of this. We talked about, by the way, if you haven't listened to DH Unplugged, myself and John C. Dvorak, I encourage you to check that out. I think it's something that you'll really enjoy. We talked about, actually, the Microsoft numbers. We are holders of Microsoft, one of the largest positions in our portfolio. We bought it quite a bit lower than it is now. And they came and surprised the street on Friday dramatically. And did a great job of cutting costs, of course, but they also blew out on revenues. That was really kind of cool. But one of the things that I want to talk to you about, we talked about that there, but one of the things I want to talk to you about is, you know, many of us use BlackBerries, iPhones, Palms. The way it looks these days, it's much more of the iPhone than anything else. But you know what? Oftentimes, it's not enough. You need to access your files and programs on your Office PC. That's why, you know, we use GoToMyPC. We get to pretty much just log into my office anytime I want, anywhere. So if I want to log in and do some research maybe from my Mac and I can't do the research on the Mac because the way the programs are written, I have to use like Internet Explorer, and I can virtualize, of course. But you know what? I want to do it in my office. Well, I just go to my PC, and I'm right there. I'm right there. It's not this big hassle. And the nice thing is they're sponsors of the show, you know, and our listeners can actually try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. Unlimited. Totally unlimited. Check it out. Do me a favor. If you haven't tried it yet, just check it out. It's really kind of neat. www.gotomypc.com/podcast. 30-day free trial. Great, great product. Really is a great product. So just go over to gotomypc.com/podcast and you get yourself a free trial. All right. Where are we going to begin? Let's start out with maybe, oh, I see. Let's start out with Walmart. Walmart announces last week that there's going to be a significant price war. Or they don't really announce that there's going to be a price war. I mean, it's not like they stand up and say, hey, we're having a price war right now, okay? What happens is that they announce that there's going to be significant price cuts or a competitive cuts coming up through the holiday season. That's interesting because demand. Is demand not there? Or the only way to get shoppers into the stores, whether it's Walmart or anywhere else, by significant slashes in pricing? What does that mean? Are we still, and we are clearly still, in a very significant deflationary market, even though gold has been, you know, hitting relative highs of late, historic highs most recently, as a matter of fact. And there's a lot of obvious demand in Asia. But in the U.S., is there a problem? I think that's a really interesting question. Well, while that's going on, a lot of the stocks around the retail sector are getting bounced around pretty well. And some are doing very well. Many of them have done an incredible job at managing inventory. So incredible, it's almost shocking how well they've done. I think a lot of that has to do with the latest grouping of technology. If you've ever listened to me talk about how technology has really done a great job at just-in-time ordering and management and monitoring and the whole process of from manufacturer to retailer or directly to consumer. Really, just an amazing job. Question is, how long does that continue? If you know, where do we reach that demarcation point? That's a question you have to ask yourself. And then the other thing is that when you think about, you know, where are we going from here, the question is obviously how much of the current demand is directly linked to stimulus and how long will that last? That's a big question. We saw unemployment tick up a little bit last week in terms of the initial claims, even though the continuing claims came down a little bit, just a little bit. As a matter of fact, a little under 6 million. One has to wonder how much of that is because people have fallen off. We've talked about that, fallen off the unemployment payment scale. But it seems there's going to be an expansion of that, another number of weeks, 14 weeks, I believe it is. So that's kind of interesting. We saw also, just to stick to economics for a second, the reason probably some of this is going on, and then what we saw after on Friday was there was a spike in the home sales, existing home sales. Did you see this on Friday? I put two charts on the site, actually, over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com in the show notes. Take a look at those because they're pretty significant. The spike in existing home sales was about 9% more or so. It really shows up better on the chart, but about 9% or so more this period than we saw last month. And that's really interesting. As a matter of fact, pricing fell a little bit, but what's really interesting and the real problem and why the markets, I think, fell off on Friday right after this report, because the reports came in pretty good, was very simple. That 30% of the homes that were being sold were distressed sales, number one. And number two, the realtors are reporting that most people that are buying are rushing in for the tax credit, the $8,000 first-time buyer's tax credit. Now, is this going to be another post-cash for clunker situation where we had the cars being sold dramatically? I mean, up to a 14 million car average, if you take the monthlies and you push it out on an annual basis. If we push that out and we annualize that, it looked great. But the following month, as soon as the cash for clunkers was no longer available, it just fell off a cliff. I mean, it's almost like nothing happened anymore. No cars were being sold. So again, stimulus helped. But the question was it sustainable? Many of the car dealers said, yeah, sure, they're in the showrooms now. They're looking. Even if they don't buy, it's getting them, you know, excited. But excited and money in your pocket and no job doesn't bring you into another dealership to buy a car, unless there's a really good reason. Same thing may be happening, and that's where the concern came in on Friday. Because if many people are going in there and they're rushing in because it's ending in November, whether or not it's going to be extended, we'll have to see. But, you know, this administration, of course, it's going to be extended. But if they don't do so, what's going to happen to new home sales? I'm not sure how that really affects the rest of the economy per se right now, why the market would fall off so much just across the board on a broad-based level. But, you know, there's a real concern about how the sustainability of this economy is moving forward. Interesting. I think that let's get into a couple of discussions here. I'm a little bit choppy today, but I have a lot of things to talk about. Let's talk about two things that could be negative. One stock that we're shorting, and I'm going to tell you why. And one stock that was a story by Porter Stansberry. And then we're going to get into a discussion. I brought back a someone who, as a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that there was this program available for restructured annuity streams. Remember that? I just mentioned it. Overwhelming response. So what I did is I brought in the CEO of the company that does this. His name is Mark Lowell. And when we go through this, usually we go through this in the beginning, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll bring him in for a conversation, actually, right here in the studio. Let's go to GE first. This is a great piece, very short piece, written again by Porter Stansberry, talking about how, you know, here's some of the basic points here. That back on July 17th, he thought that there was some question about, you know, what was going on with GE. One of the things that he mentions is great. He says that GE always says that it brings good things to life, but in fact, over the decade, it has mostly been about bringing good debt to life, okay? Because GE has relied on their AAA credit rating for a long time in the short-term commercial paper market, and then they would lend it out at a much higher rate because they got a great credit rating, so they could really get this at a cheap rate, and then they could lend it out at much higher, even in credit cards. And that worked great, and when they were doing all sorts of really packaged ways of securitizing the debt and all that, it was great. But here's the problem. Again, he's saying that GE owes its creditors about $518 billion. $518 billion. But its tangible net assets are only $17 billion. Thus, on a tangible basis, he says, it's currently leveraged more than 30 to 1. Well, that's the number that we heard about all along, right? But it's a major industrial company. It's not a financial company. So about a 3.5% decline in the value of his assets would pretty much just wipe out its tangible equity. And that's a problem. So the other problem is that on the $17 billion of assets, the company only earned $2 million. Wow. Now, GE, he also further says that spent about $4.5 billion on interest last quarter. Okay? Unbelievable. It's now spending $17 billion to service its $500 billion in debt. Not good. He says they're rated pretty high right now, but what happens if, you know, all of a sudden we see a spike up in interest rates and it would cost them even more? Last year, GE earned about $45 billion before interest and taxes. It spent $33 billion of the profits on capital expenditures and necessary investments, expenses required to keep the business going. That left only $12 billion of owner earnings, not enough to pay the debt rate. Now, here's what the real kicker is. If you were a company, he mentions, and you had a 91% of your money is being consumed, you know, by cost factors and all that. How can you avoid bankruptcy if you can't, you know, pay for things? How do you do that? So that's kind of ridiculous. Last year, even though GE could actually afford its debt and required, of course, a government bailout to do so, it spent $12.5 billion on dividends. And then, you know, it cut its dividend, of course, in February. Then it's going to probably be eliminated, he says. Finally, today the stock market value of GE, according to market cap, is $171 billion. And the kicker, the fact is that the common stock, every single share, isn't worth anything. And he's telling you to plan accordingly. The bankruptcy case for GE. Pretty interesting piece, I thought. I can't get my hands around it entirely because it seems in this environment with this administration that becomes, I don't know, it's questionable. Do me a favor. Write your comments and your things. Go over to the Discipline Investor. Let me hear your comments on that. I'd like to get a conversation. Is GE going bankrupt? Is it going to be worth nothing? Is it going the way of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, GM, and AIG, and all those other good things? Let's not even talk about GM. Let's not even talk about AIG, and let's not even talk about the Paysar's supposed pay reductions. That's for another discussion. Right now, it doesn't even look like it's really happening. When GM, what's his name from GM, the CEO, is going from a $1.5 million to a $5 billion. $5 million, excuse me, billions, yeah, billion, who cares anymore, right? But he's going from a $1.5 million to a $5.5 million total package. That's what we call a pay cut. All right, on to something that we're looking at. Now, this may think you may think we're a little bit nutty here, but we've actually done this a couple of times recently. We've went short Wynn Resorts, W-Y-N-N. Here's some of the reasons why, and I want you to take a look at a few things. Take a look at a chart. You know, Wynn just recently had a successful IPO, raised about $1.5 billion. I think it was $1.6 billion on the McCaw property, the McCaw property that they have there. And they took that in and pretty much going to use it to fund a lot of the Las Vegas properties and the losses. They have a 68 times next year's EPS, 68 times next year's. Wow. Is it worth that? They took recently, in addition to all the money they took in from the McCaw IPO, they refinanced and took in additional $500 debt. Now, I'm wondering, you take in that kind of money, why don't you just pay that debt down? But they, instead of that, they issued more debt to pay off debt, clearly at a, maybe a lower interest rate. But I thought that was really interesting that they had to go out and get debt. I think in this market, with the appetite they have now for debt, for equity, everybody's going out and actually doing what they can to issue. And what's really interesting is, here's an interesting statistic you should know, that the IPOs this year have done the worst they've ever done in history. The IPOs usually perform significantly better than they've been performing, especially the most recent ones. Dole came out with an IPO, and they priced at the low end. Shonda Games got crushed when they came out. That was just greed. Now, here's where the thing is on Wynn that I want to talk to you about. Not giving taking anything away from Steve Wynn. You have to be careful with this because you got to do it in a trading range, of course. But we went short, and then I think we made about 8% or 9 or 8.5% in about a week and closed the position. We reshorted it, and we're back up about 3% on it again. Now, here's the thing that you want to look at. That last week, McCaw, the government there, said they're going to be limiting the age or increasing the age of people that can actually gamble there. They're also going to be potentially limiting the gaming on some of the tables and machines, okay? There's also competition coming in because Las Vegas Sands is finishing off their project if they can successfully raise the money through an IPO. And then the whole family, HO, the whole family, Stanley Ho and his family, are actually going to be finishing the second floor of their magnificent facility there as well. So you have a lot of potential problems coming in the area of competition. You have the potential for, even though it's very hot over there in the gaming area, that, you know, what's going to happen with the Vegas properties? I mean, Vegas is pretty much dead right now, and it's admitted by everybody. There's no secret there. So we think there's an interesting way to play this, and Wynn is a great company, no question, but the gambling has seen, it's really gotten ahead of itself, and much of that has to do with the fact that they had that successful IPO. There's not a company that's going to go down 50, 60% because they have that money in the bank right now, but I got to tell you, it costs a lot of money to run those facilities. And $1.5 billion minus the transaction fees that you have for the selling groups, etc., how long is that really going to last? Interesting, I think. So with that in mind, I think we talked about some good things here. Make sure to check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I want you to go comment on whether or not GE is going bankrupt. And also I'll mention to you that when we get back, we're going to be talking with Mark Lowell from the Restructured Settlement Company. And I got a few questions for him because I want to make sure I understand what this is all about, and I'll do my best to make sure we explain it. He explains it properly, and I kind of pull some questions out of him. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And we're back, and we're talking about something today I mentioned before the break. Something that's different than what we talked about before, because we've talked about all the different investments. We talked about equities and bonds, and we talked about mutual funds. And, you know, I thought that we'd talk about something a little alternative right now, because so many people have asked that, you know, what else is out there? What else can we do? You know, there's commodities, there's futures, there's options, there's currency transactions. And what are the big boys doing? What are the hedge funds doing? What's out there that the pension plans are doing? So what I thought we'd do is, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, we're going to bring in Mark Lowell, who's actually in studio, the spacious and gorgeous studio of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So listen, this is interesting because I hope we can actually create this picture of what this is over the audio here. Because, you know, one of the things that I found interesting when you and I talked, and Mark is from the Restructured Settlement Company, and basically what this is buying a stream of income that's guaranteed. And I thought this was really cool because, you know, everybody's looking for something that can balance out their portfolio. But give me the quick cliff notes of what this is. I mean, give me, you know, I'm stupid, I don't understand the stuff. This is not my area of expertise. I mean, how do you explain this to somebody?
That's a good question. Well, the best way for me to start is I always have to give people a little bit of an education because not everybody knows what a structured settlement is. So let me start by just doing a little bit of a definition. A structured settlement is a legal settlement. There's a, for example, I'll use an example as best way I can do it. Let's say, for example, Andrew, you run me over with your car, and me and my attorney sue you and your insurance company.
Right.
Well, if I win, then there is a settlement. Now, that settlement is paid out in one of two ways, either some sort of a lump sum payment to me or some sort of a stream of income. That stream of income is called a structured settlement. And those settlements are paid by way of monthly, yearly, sometimes deferred for a while, paid in lump sums. There's all different types of settlement streams that are paid out over periods of time that may be as short as 2 years and as long as 30 years.
So this is like, this is when somebody wins a case in court and the insurance company or somebody's going to pay out and they decide, you know, obviously not a lump sum, but if you get a payment stream of over your lifetime, we're going to give you $2,000 a month or something like that. You know, if you're pain and suffering and all these other things, this is kind of those situation.
Exactly.
Is it always for an accident? I mean, is it, how does that?
You know what it is. I mean, most of the time, at least with regards to structured settlements, there's normally a plaintiff that has suffered some sort of a loss. And believe it or not, most of them are from some sort of a car accident. It's very common.
Real. Yeah, well, that's way up there, I guess. I mean, we're always finding, I mean, that's where the ambulance chaser thing came in from, right?
Right.
When the attorneys. But so now, so somebody's getting the money. I don't get how. I mean, I do understand it, but I'm trying to, again, play the, I understand how this works, but, you know, explain to me, so how do you end up getting and buying that stream of income?
Right. Well, here's what happens. You have an individual now who's receiving this stream of income, and for whatever the reason, that income may not be enough for them at the moment, but again, there's a number of reasons that somebody might want a lump sum for that stream of income. So there are companies out there called factoring companies, and there's a number of big ones out there, and you probably, many of the listeners have seen advertisements. They're in news, they're in media, they're in TV, radio, and they're always approaching those people. As a matter of fact, you probably have seen it in lottery streams, because quite often in the past, people that have won lotteries, there have been advertisements for people that
these are the commercials I see on TV, right?
Yes.
For like, you know, do you have... You know, when the lottery comes up, and are you a lottery winner, or you have money? Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah.
I actually never put that together.
Well, it's and the factoring companies that bought lottery streams, it's not quite as big with lotteries anymore because many of the state's lottery systems offer the different alternative payout options, where in the past they didn't have those options.
All right, because you only take a lump sum.
That's correct.
Right, yeah.
So now...
Well, I'd take the $147 million lump sum, wouldn't you?
I would take it, and I'll take it right now, and I'll talk to you in another couple
months. Right, what am I going to wait years
exactly.
for?
Exactly. Yeah, so what happens in the structured settlements is, for whatever the reason, these individuals that are receiving them, they decide they want a lump sum. And they'll usually approach one of these factoring companies and say, listen, for example, I'm receiving $10,000 a year for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
What would you give me if I were to take a lump sum and I assign by legal court order to your company? What would you give me in lump sum?
Oh, so I see. So the people who they may need the money, or they don't want to get the income, or what, you know, not want to get the income, but they want to fast forward the receipt of it.
Right.
Right.
And again, I said there's a number of reasons. Let's say that you're receiving $10,000 a year for 10 years, but you have an opportunity to buy a business for $50,000.
Mm.
$10,000 a year won't do it,
right.
But $50,000 will. That'll enable you to put a deposit down.
Mm.
Or some people just need the money.
Hmm. All right. So you have this scenario where you're backed by, is it always backed by an insurance company? I mean, does it somehow have private, or how does that work?
Nope. Always backed by insurance companies.
Oh, because that's the structure that it goes through.
That's correct.
All right. So somebody gets into an accident. They get an award and of some amount of money that's paid out over time. And now you are negotiating, or somebody's negotiating with them to say, okay, you know what? We'll take that income off your hands for return for some money. And what kind of rate is that? How does that work?
Again, when it's originally structured, the original structure and the payout has nothing to do with when this settlement is sold on the secondary market as an investment. Let me give you an example. Let's go back to the example of $10,000 a year for 10 years. Okay.
Right.
Now that's sold to the factoring company. The discount that is provided where the factoring company is buying that stream of income, it is that discount that they buy it for which creates the internal rate of return available to an outside investor on the secondary market. So if they're able to acquire it, let's say, for 50 cents on the dollar, so this individual gets $50,000 for that stream of $10,000 a year for 10 years. They got it at 50 cents on the dollar. That could be sold, let's say, at 70 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the investment that is available to the outside investor in the secondary market.
Okay, so for anybody, including myself, that may have gotten lost in a little bit of that, I'm going to restate what I think has just been said. Okay?
Okay.
So basically, there's a money that's available, and I'm going to come in and offer the money to get the stream of income. And because I'm buying at a discount, I mean, that's the bottom line here, because I'm buying at a discount from what the calculation, which is a net present value, but I'm buying it as a discount, I'm going to get the money back to me plus some interest over a period of time. And that's guaranteed by the insurance company because you get a court order and assignment, if you will, or a redirection of
it's
the...
It's an assignment. It's a legal assignment.
Okay, so it's an assignment, legal assignment of the money to you for that amount, for that time. So therefore, you're dealing directly, essentially, with the insurance company, and that's where the guarantee is. There's no kind of middleman involved there.
That's correct. Give you an example. The same example I've been using. That stream of $10,000 a year for 10 years is now available as an investment for an outside investor. So whatever it is they're going to purchase it for, I know I said 70 cents on the dollar, but let's say it's $70,000.
Right.
That $70,000 will ultimately, over 10 years, return $100,000.
Right, so you made 30% on your money or whatever. And that
over
example,
10 years. And, right. and the IRRs on this, the rates of the internal rates of return on these types of investment can range anywhere from 5.5% to 10.5%, 11%.
All right, so we'll take
on
the,
a guaranteed basis from
right.
all these major insurance companies, rated insurance companies.
So what's the amount? First of all, what's the amount somebody invests usually in this? I mean, is this? I know one of the things he told me was that, you know, these were kind of things that were only available for major companies because they were buying these blocks
exactly.
and it was like, you know, millions and millions of dollars. But one of the things that intrigued me was that I remember I asked you about this and you said that it's a whole different story now. You can get it at much lower amounts. And I know, I don't know, it was something like, you know, you could do $10,000, $20,000, something like that. But is this the same thing that was, you know, being used by like hedge funds and the sophisticated?
Right.
It's the same thing, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, let me clarify this new model. Because I know what I'm talking about may sound like something that's brand new, and it's not brand new.
Right.
The model of factoring companies purchasing structured settlements has been around for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
It's only just become available to the individual investor,
right.
And here's why. In the past, the model was as follows. Factoring company goes out, buys up millions of dollars of structured settlements.
Uh-huh.
How do they do it? They leverage it. They borrow money to do it.
Right.
So they buy the structured settlements. They stick them in this big pool. They securitize them, and they ship them off to Wall Street and hedge funds and institutions. Well, that was never available to the individual investor until now because, as we know with this economy, who's lending those millions and millions of dollars? There's some,
right.
but not much.
Right.
And
price,
today's
yeah.
model, and the model that we do, is the one that gets these individual structure settlements and on a one-by-one basis can be acquired by individual investors.
So, I mean, one of the things is, I mean, people listen to me, we always talk about, you know, different investments out there. And, I mean, where's the risk here? That we always look at downside. And well, I think that's the important thing to look at, right?
So, it's a great question.
Yeah, oh.
Well, here's the risk.
Okay.
These are investments that are being paid now directly to the individual investor, the purchaser of these structured settlements.
Right.
And they're being paid directly by the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
The checks, the investment returns are coming from the Allstates of the world, the New York Lifes of the world, these large insurance companies they're paying directly to. Now, I always get the question, what's the risk? Well, I will tell you this. Annuity streams, oh, by the way, structured settlements are designed in the annuity divisions of these insurance companies
mm-hmm.
because basically that's what these are. These are
right.
the annuity payouts. So they're designed, except they're specifically designed by lawyers based on that original settlement that was settled.
All right, yeah,
okay?
You hit a core already with the lawyer thing.
What? Yeah.
I'm kidding.
So what they do is the insurance companies will now pay this out, and they're guaranteeing the payment. This is it's on the books. I mean, it doesn't matter what it was purchased for in the secondary market. This stream has been established originally, and it must continue. There has never, as far as I know, there has never been a default ever of a structured settlement. And the reason there almost can't be, anything can happen. We know we're in a crazy world right now. But the reason it would be very difficult for a default on one of these to occur would be because the moment an Allstate, as an example, does not make a payment, that would affect every other insurance company in the world because the confidence would be lost. It almost goes back to that statement, AIG, too big to fail kind of thing.
Yeah.
But every, and companies have gone out of business before. Insurance companies, we all know, all companies go out of business. Yeah,
Baldwin United, I think Metropolitan took them over years ago.
And that's right. Many companies are taken over by many, but that's what happens. The insurance companies that run into problems have always been taken over by other insurance companies and their obligations have been met because it would affect them directly if any insurance company defaults on it.
Right. I mean, AIG, another the company didn't take over, but our government did for $85 billion or $200 billion. That's another subject for another time we're not going to talk about. So, all right, I got that. Now, I guess the big thing is that one of the things that people, I don't know, I guess you wonder is, so we know a stock you buy, you buy in a brokerage account. And I mean, is it easy? Do you have to, like, I mean, what's the deal on this? Is it easy to, I mean, if it was only for hedge funds, how do we analyze these things?
Well, you know, the analysis of it is it's so black and white, it's a little scary. There, when you purchase a structured settlement on the secondary market, you're filling out, you're signing an assignment agreement.
Right.
The assignment agreement must legally be transferred to this new assignee.
Right.
Usually takes about 8 to 12 weeks to transfer over by court order, and that's it. You begin receiving whatever the payment streams on the structured settlement were as if they were still going to the original plaintiff.
Right. So it seems to me where this fits in is, it seems to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but for someone who's looking for fixed income and you can't get a decent rate because maybe banks are really low or whatever, or someone who's looking for opportunity to make a decent amount of money, whether it's 6 or 10, 8%, whatever you said it was, that wants an alternative investment, something that's outside, non-correlated to the markets, or someone maybe, I guess, someone who's looking for an income stream to maybe a retiree or something like that. You know, somebody that's looking for an income stream that they need. I mean, that's where it seems to fit because the upside opportunity is really limited to just what the amount is. In other words, it's not both income and growth. It's just the income, which is fine, but it's just that's what I think is the point here. So if we're looking for, you know, an 8% investment that's guaranteed with, you know, over whatever the period of time is, that, you know, that's what you see is what you're going to get. There's nothing else going on.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. They're listed there. They're all individually listed, almost like a when you wake up in the morning and the bond house has come out with the new sheets of bond offers.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the new sheets of structured settlement offers that are now available for outside purchase. But, you know, talking about who they're for, you know, it's an interesting subject because the buyers of structured settlements are ranging in age from age 30 to age 80 because there's so many different machinations of a structured settlement. There are those structured settlements that have no payments coming out for years and then they come out in a lump sum. There are those that start immediately and the income streams go on a monthly basis. Many of these are now being purchased inside of pensions, profit sharing plans, and your IRAs, self-directed IRAs. It doesn't matter how the money comes out on those. What if you're 40 years old, you know you can't touch it for 20 years or so. Why not go out long-term on a 20-year structured settlement when you know you can return maybe a 7.5% or 8% return on that?
Right. No, I that's the interesting thing is, I was going to mention that or say that or ask you that, I guess, when you say that you can have different machinations where one will have income and one won't, one will have a lump sum. Is that kind of like a zero coupon bond, I guess it is, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's how you look at it?
The lump sum. Yeah. Structured settlements are just like zero coupon bonds.
Interesting. So this is, I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting because we always talk, I mean, we've been doing this, 132nd episode, and we always talk about stocks and bonds. We talked about some other things here and there, and we brought some other people on before to talk about things. And I know what was really interesting, I thought, was that when I mentioned it just in brief passing 3 weeks ago or something like that, we put a little form on the website, on the show notes, said, hey, if you're interested in this, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, we'll get more information. We'll get Mark to send you out some information. I mean, it was like an unbelievable. It was like a snowfall of people.
It was pretty exciting. Yeah, so well, I'll tell you what. Allow me to interrupt for just one moment. It's a very unique opportunity where your demand at the moment is about five times your supply, because that's the situation I'm in right now. When we put a new offer out, we put it out on the everything we do is by internet, and we put it out on emails. And the moment we hit click and send, the calls start coming in because we identify on the lists all the newer deals that are coming out.
So it's, that's kind of interesting. So so you have to be kind of, it's like you have to be there waiting to get the best deals.
I mean, I get calls sometimes before the new list comes out and say, listen, what time is the new list coming out so I can grab any of the ones that I like?
That's hysterical.
Because one of the things you mentioned before is how much do you invest?
Right.
Well, the neat thing about these is they're all across the board. There's some down as low as $15,000 in purchase price, as high as $200,000-$300,000 in purchase price. So if you're looking to build a big portfolio, you're going out grabbing them one by one, the ones that will help build it. And if you already know you want a big portfolio, then you can put together what's known as a purchase fill order, and you say, listen, I want to invest $1 million. We go out and target those structured settlements looking to fill up $1 million of structured settlements for that purchase fill order.
Right, so you create your own. So that's pretty cool. So listen, you know, like I said, I thought that it would be interesting to talk about this because of everybody's looking for not only an edge but also alternatives. So anyway, I had some good interest. We'll put another form on the website. Just pop your name and information there. We'll send it off, and Mark will send you, I guess, some of the information that goes over. There's a kind of a cool PowerPoint presentation that he has. It's probably be good with that explains some of this. But I got to tell you something. As disciplined investors, a lot of different things. We have a whole chapter in my book, The Disciplined Investor, just on fixed annuities, because it's one of the things that most people don't think about. But a lot of the pension plan, well, almost all pension plans, use what's called GICs, guaranteed investment contracts. This kind of falls under that same genre, you know, where you're having something that's guaranteed, particularly in this case, guaranteed by an insurance company and totally backed, where you don't have to worry about it, you know, no problem sleeping at night. Obviously, if you have a piece of paper that says this is assigned to you and is guaranteed for this period of time, et cetera, et cetera. Versus, you know, sometimes the stock market, we know this, the stock market could be a little bit rocky, you know, but nonetheless, I thought it was a good thing. Expanding your education in the area of all, you know, opportunities is essential, and you have to know about them. Some of you may be yawning to death and saying, this isn't for me. I want the, you know, the go-go. I want the juice. Some of you may be saying, hey, you know what? This is something interesting. Point is, though, you have to know what's out there. You have to understand what's available to you before you can make any moves, not only in the market, but with your money. So, you know, one more thing that you can chalk up to saying, hey, I heard about that, whether it comes up in a conversation or whether you're thinking about actually doing something. So anyway, I thought it was interesting. I hope you did too. We're going to, you know, finish up with the regular discussion, talk a little bit about the markets and all that, and when we get back in a minute. And in the meantime, if you do want some information, go over the show notes on the Disciplined Investor podcast. Click on show notes or podcast. There'll be a little form there. Fill it out, and I'll get Mark to send you the information. Will you do that, sir?
I will do that. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Mark Lowell from the Restructured Settlement Company and great guy. I do think you'll enjoy talking with him as well if you ever do have the opportunity. And thanks for being a guest on this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that's the show for today. But I want to mention to you that we have on the site another little form thing. If you want more information from Mark, just go to the show notes. And all you have to do is put in a couple of pieces of information. You get it shipped right off. You get the information you want about the restructured plans. Find out what the rates are. And you get on that list of what rates come out. So that's kind of cool. Anyway, we have lots of things coming up. I got to tell you something. Some really neat things coming up. And I think that over the next few weeks, you're going to be pretty excited about some of the guests we have and some of the things we have. And not to mention the fact that we're approaching episode number 150. Our 150th episode. So if you have any ideas on what we can do for that to make it, you know, so special, I'd appreciate you writing me, of course, at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And it is that time of year when we're starting to think about the holidays. Do yourself a favor. Do a loved one a favor. Pick up a book. The Disciplined Investor is available at Amazon for, I don't know, like $13. It's on audible.com. It's at iTunes for a download. It's also, you know, if you get it from iTunes, actually, they have a little link that you get with it that has all the graphics and the charts and the pictures and all the different things that are in the book, so you can actually follow along. I'm going to get to that point, of course. And, of course, you can also get it on the Kindle at Amazon. So, whatever your choice is. In the meantime, we'll speak to you soon. Thanks for listening. This is Andrew Horowitz. Have a great week. Have a successful week. Have a profitable week. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements.